Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Fireteam Chat, IGN's Destiny Show. Thank you so much for joining me and my co-host in the studio today. Joining me is CJ Gibson.
What's up?
Sean Finnegan.
Chomp, chomp.
Still doing that.
Wow.
And Stephen Rue.
Bam, bam, bam.
Oh, I like that.
Oh, there it is.
I like that.
There it is.
Bam is me, though. Oh. Bam's my thing. You did it pow is. Last
he,
time.
He takes everybody's.
Bam!
Takes everybody's.
What is Bam?
I don't know. It's just something I started doing out on Lock.
I don't watch. I didn't watch the Lock.
You did Pow. Pow? Good better last time. Anyway, on the show today, we're going to be talking all about Last Word, what we think about the quest, what we think about the weapon, and we're also going to talk about that weapon tease. Who knows what it could be? It's definitely not Thorn. And how the gun is performing in PvP. And we have a whole bunch of fan questions, a little bit of a slower week. But man, some of those sandbox changes to the weapons, it's really, really cool to see people on Reddit posting these insane runs.
Yeah.
Like there was a Whisper run.
Saw that.
Using Syntheseps and the lower tier on the Striker Titan.
Yeah, where he basically just went through and shoulder checked everything and got his
all the
back.
Way to the end.
Yeah, for like 5 minutes or something. It was crazy.
Yeah, that was awesome. And I saw a Warlock with Infinite Nova Bomb.
Oh, geez, I haven't seen that.
With Skull Dire Ahamkara.
Yeah. And the Hunter Golden Gun, too, like firing more than six shots.
You extra shots, oh, like yeah. Up to nine,
yeah.
I heard.
Hate that. So good. Yeah. So good.
So there's some stuff going on within the sandbox that's really fun. But yep. The big topic is the exotic quest. It's finally here. We've wrapped up Black Armory. Let's start with the quest itself. How did you guys feel about it? I didn't like it. CJ, what did you think?
You don't say.
Yeah. Big surprise.
So we all kind of played it last night at around the same time. So it was kind of cool. Steve and I jumped in to grind the Lost Sector simultaneously near the end. Sean, you got it about like an hour before us. So
yeah, I did half of it yesterday and then half of it today.
But it was funny listening to your
earlier this morning.
Yeah. Listening to your reaction, you got it like, oh yeah, so cool. And you took it into PvP for the first round.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I was a diehard Last Word fan in Destiny 1. Mm. I was one of those guys who I thought you were foolish if you used Thorn over Last Word.
What?
Yeah. Like, I had Thorn and I used it a lot too, but like, to me, I was very much a Last Word guy.
Yeah.
Mastering the sort of spacing that you have to be good at in order to get Last Word to be very effective, because it's not that great at range, and it was definitely, even now, it still loses out to Ace of Spades and stuff, and I imagine it'll lose out to Thorn at range. But being, if you were really good at mastering that space and getting in close range with people, you were almost unbeatable.
Yeah.
And I feel that way about Last Word now. It feels very powerful, and I love it in PvP, and it's just like a really cool gun.
Yeah, it looks cool and feels cool.
I was hoping you guys would talk a little bit about the quest, because
at
the end of the quest, there's this mission where you have to like draw really
yes.
quick.
Yeah.
That was spoilers.
Yeah, if people haven't got to it yet, but we're going to talk about it for a second.
What did you guys think about that portion of the quest? There's not really anything to spoil. There's one thing that happens.
Yeah, exactly. But it is kind of neat. Yeah, it was cool because Steve and I were kind of playing it together, and yeah, I didn't didn't know at first what to do because you're like, dude, shoot him in the head. He's registering immune. Like, oh, you're drawing with him. It was pretty neat. Like, didn't last long, but it was pretty neat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the most interesting part of the quest. Like, the quest line itself is,
go to Lost Sectors, get 15 kills there.
It's pretty simple, and it takes you, you know, if you're quick about it, maybe like two and a half hours to get through that first main section if you're decent at PvP.
A lot of community members did not like the PvP portion, I've heard. I've seen that on Reddit.
I know.
But guess what I'm about to say.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Get good.
Get good.
Dude, like,
it literally took me two matches to get through the PvP portion.
You get 2% for a kill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you minus one.
You minus one.
For a death.
But an assist counts as 2% too. Yeah.
Yes.
So you literally have to have a 0.5 KDA. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a 0.5 KDA, I'm sorry. I agree with Sean.
Okay, so real quick, these three are very good at PvP games. You've probably seen me play PvP games, and it's not great. But I did it. I did it in one sitting. I think the whole quest took me four hours.
Did you play with like teammates or did you solo queue?
I did play with some friends, and honestly, it wasn't the kills that were challenging because that was just sort of on me.
It was the revenge kills,
and that part I was like, oh, this makes me play in such a weird way that I don't like.
So that first step where you just have to get to 100%. That was pretty easy for me. It literally took me two matches. I did 55% in one match, then the rest in another one. I play very aggressively and I flank a lot, and I don't know. I just like to kill people in that game, in the game.
Yeah.
You're right though. When you have to get the revenge medal, the blood for blood, and I forget the name of the other one.
Best serve cold.
That takes a little bit more strategy. Like, I found myself following around other guardians and waiting for them. I switched to a pulse rifle and I was like, waiting for them to fight, and then I'd jump in and back them up, but I'd also kind of let them die.
Exactly.
Like, I could have saved them before, but that's the only way
I couldn't get you, buddy. Sorry.
And that particular step maybe took me five matches in quick play. Five or six.
Dude, it took me so many matches for
really? More than that, though? Five or six?
My play style is I just ape everything.
Yeah.
I'm the guy that you get the revenge medals off of, because I've run in there, kill like three, and die.
Yeah.
So I was... If I played with you yesterday, I apologize because I baited the crap out of
you. Yeah, it's what it has to be. I play the same way as you. I'm very fast. I'm very aggressive. But on this, you can't be that way. Otherwise, you're giving everyone else the medals and you have to earn the medals.
Dude, that's going to be my story. I supported my team. I let them get all those medals that they needed, and they helped me. They threw a few deaths.
Dude, it was so bad. I launched Mayhem and I stood in spawn for like 10 seconds until like everyone left, and then I started following everyone.
Yeah. But see, that's what I did. And I did it in Mayhem in about three or four games, because with Blade Barrage, you just get the super back instantly when you use shards. And I just waited for everybody to go in. They would all kill each other and I'd stand back. I'm like, okay, cool.
Whoever spawns.
Blade Barrage is a really touchy subject for me because it was adjusted for PvP, and PvP, it's still totally fine.
Still pretty good.
And now it sucks in PvE. That's what I've heard.
It's still pretty good. I think it's one of those things where I think they nerfed like the initial like impact damage. So like the explosions is a little bit more.
But it's supposed to be nerfed in PvP, and it's great.
No, it's still good in PvP. Like I didn't feel like, oh, this is not working. I was talking to Steven. I think it procs a little bit differently now when you're wearing
Teddy,
the gauntlets.
Teddy was saying last night that now a majority or all of the damage happens on the explosion and not the initial impact. Because before each
whatever it's called, blade does 35 damage. I used to do like 115 or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, for the most part, it still works well. And I got it. Yeah, I got it. You know, that part of the quest done in about, I think, three mayhem matches.
So,
but it was baiting your teammates, waiting for them to die and going.
There is this issue on Reddit of the PvP elements of this quest being too difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys feel that to be the case?
I mean, I feel like I sympathize and can understand those players. I don't relate. That's the problem. So when I don't relate to something, I always go, okay. I think the bigger issue was it wasn't clear. Like, and I think that was the problem with the last time.
Well,
it wasn't clear what you had to do in PvP. And obviously people look it up and they even addressed it
it
says like get to 100%, but it doesn't directly say what you need to do.
But Destiny's never said that.
But that's what I mean. So they addressed it in the weekly update though. Like they said, oh, people didn't know what to do in the Crucible. And it's funny that, like if you didn't play Destiny 1, I guess you wouldn't know. And that's probably what they're running into a little bit. But did I actually think it was an issue? No, not personally.
That's really odd for me to hear that they had to address that, because it literally says get kills increase your percentage, deaths take it away. Like it says that in the tooltip.
It does.
So how is that?
Because I think it's because it's a percentage. Because you don't ever really like Bungie never
says.
You
don't have a good feeling.
You don't have like a number. And I think when there's a number, like kill 15 of these dudes, your brain goes, oh, it's like what is this percentage thing? This was an issue with the last time Thorne was around in the quest.
But it's hard to do that with percentage oriented quests because you could kill.
Absolutely.
If you didn't die at all. It would just take 50 kills, right?
Right.
Yeah. You guys excited about those void kills in Crucible? I can't wait to do that. Because in D1, to get Thorn, which is being teased, it was void kills specifically in the Crucible.
Yeah.
That was a difficult quest.
I didn't find the whole quest difficult in general, but the PvP parts I find particularly head scratching when people say it's too hard.
Yeah. I mean, but it's weird.
The metal part.
Yeah, what's your take on it?
Oh, I didn't particularly like the quest. To me, it was another grindy quest, and I was hoping for a little bit more of story elements. I read all the lore tabs as they
really
came up.
Really good.
It's sort of a story from Shimmel Fur talking about you getting the power. And
it's kind of like letters to you.
Yeah.
It's weird in a way because like they're like more journal entries. Mm-hmm. Like, let me back up. I wish they were more like journal entries. They play more like letters directly to you. Mm-hmm. And they're very like abstract and kind of like philosophical.
You get two sets of lore.
You know the goth kids in South Park? I just pictured one of them reading the letters.
There's the Shin set of lore, and then there's the like the Dredge and Yor set of lore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because what I did think was really cool is that Shin's talking to you about like revenge, feeling like the holes in your heart and all that stuff, and like the revenge for Cade and all that, and how he was on that path and how it kind of led him down a different path. And I'm a Dredgen, and so when he was talking about people like wanting to take up these weapons of sorrow and like fake parading this guy's name around that he ended up killing, like this all really kind of cool stuff.
Yeah,
like the lore is awesome.
And then when you go back to the Drifter and he starts calling you a punk and he's like,
you're playing both sides now, like that's so cool. That's it's just, I thought the lore and storytelling was actually kind of cool about it.
I like the quests. But I want to ask, like, what would you have made it different, Dustin?
I would have had cutscenes or something, some sort of narrative delivery device instead of reading.
You sound like
the 8 pages or so in a lore tab in the game. It would have been great to have some sort of narrative delivery device, like put a Shin Mal Fur character somewhere in the game and have him actually talk to us. Have somebody narrate that character and deliver it that way, because I really didn't feel a big connection with the letters. I felt like I was reading a letter that was really it seemed a little like ominous, but it was written by like, I didn't particularly connect with the writing. So I'm like, all right, I get it, you're dark and brooding and bad things happen and now we get this gun.
I think it could have benefited from a little bit more sort of a
texture,
like narrative presence. Like, so for instance, if you're a guardian who plays the game but isn't, like, I'm not even really hyper-focused on lore, there's a good chance you have no idea who Shin Malfur is.
Yeah.
And so, like, these letters are just, they read like total, like, they read like some goth punk kid in high school who's, like, emo, right? About, like, just being sad and dark and brooding in, like, December and snow and stuff.
That's kind of how they read to me. I know who the character is.
But, like, to me, they're really cool because I know who Shin Malfur is. So, yeah, you actually bring up a good point. Like a really cool but brief cutscene about Shin's like history and his role with the Last Word, and like maybe even just a little backstory with Jaren and, you know, who Dredgen Yor is. That whole confrontation could have added like a really AAA feel to this small element.
It did open up Bife to make a fantastic little video.
So
about,
I've heard
about the Last Word. I haven't had an opportunity to watch it yet, but everybody's raving about it. So
yeah, I haven't either.
Check that out.
But, so cool.
But we had Fallout on here last week, and he's doing a bunch of videos right now. I actually watched his take on, like, you know, the quest with Shin Malfur and, you know, just the conversation between Thor and the Last Word. So it is cool. Like, when you understand that, I think you give it a little bit more space or some understanding, but it would be nice to have some kind of like narrative voiceover or something in there to explain it.
It's weird because you have the ghost delivery device. You could have played back recordings or and I wonder why that's not utilized more. I guess you have to pay a voice actor.
You know how some of those, even in the campaigns of Destiny, like Destiny 2, when they kind of just do these like cool sort of abstract art pieces that reflect points that have happened in the game before, like kind of a bring you up to speed type thing. Even one of those could have been cool. It doesn't have to be like an in-game engine voice acted cutscene, but like someone like Zavala or even the Drifter being like, I remember Shin, I met him once, and then you see like a cool art piece of these two guys. Like, just put a visual to who this guy is. Like, even that could go a long way.
Well, I liked that. I think it was the last part of the Malfeasance quest, right, where you actually heard the dialogue of the Golden Gun and that interaction.
Cool. And that it's strange because they teased that mission during the Last Word teaser. We never visited that area,
but that was cool. I remember doing that, and then you see the shadow on the rock, like even something subtle was, like that to tell really that cool. story, like that was really well done. So would have been nice, but I still like the actual quest and the moment where you like you haven't obtained the weapon, and then you hit the button and you're like draw, and you're like, oh yeah, it just appears, and you're like
definitely,
like, that was really cool.
I definitely was like draw, and then I like press the button, and then I have the gun, and I'm like cool, and then I was like, I guess I shoot this guy. But
and you know what, you know what's really cool is those guys that were drawing on you, they were holding Thorn.
Ooh,
oh, really?
That's cool. Yeah. Well, they did tease Thorn already. I got to ask you guys a question. How do you feel about the fact that we're doing these exotic quests for weapons that we had in Destiny 1 that we're just now getting back in Destiny 2? And now they're teasing the next exotic to be another weapon that we had in Destiny 1 that we're getting in Destiny 2?
I fully expect there to be some backlash about, hey, these are weapons that we've already had before. We're just getting old content again. I can see why that is. I don't like the idea of just recycling content and then giving it back to us that we've already, you know, stuff that we've already had. But at the same time, more content is good. More content is good. And I think that if Bungie is thoughtful and makes the process of obtaining these weapons that we really want, even if we've had them before, awesome, then I'm on board with that. Like, if the quest is fun, I like just doing the quest. I don't really mind that I've already had this weapon.
Yeah, I agree with you. I understand where they're coming from in terms of this is content that we've already paid for or that we've already had. Why are we earning it again? But after holding the Last Word yesterday, it felt so good. Like, it felt like you were being at home again. And it feels like an iconic Destiny weapon. And it just feels like it should be in the game along with, like, Thorn, Galahorn. And, like, those weapons, please just bring them all back because it feels like Destiny to me.
Yeah.
Totally.
I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat. I heard and understand the other side. I think the quest I remember playing Destiny 1 was the Galahorn quest. Really well done. Had a little story for forging the Galahorn and rebuilding it. That was cool. And there's a lot of people who didn't play Destiny 1. So bringing all these cool weapons back into the meta and into the game. Yeah, I wish there was maybe a little bit more story behind the weapons if you were not a part of that Destiny 1 experience. But them coming back into Destiny 2, I love it. I really enjoy it.
I talked a little bit about this on the stream. Like, you know, I stream a lot after work. But one of the challenges, twitch.tv/thedestiny channel. You can check it out. Anyway, one of the things that I'm feeling and a challenge that I'm having with Destiny right now is the fact that I feel like I've had these experiences before, and it's just being recycled over and over and over again. So for me, it's hard to feel incentivized to gear up. What am I gearing up for? I'm 650, so I get a set that's not particularly compelling in Iron Banner this time for me. Maybe it'll be a better looking set next time. The raid sets, there's no real perks. The raid set in the new raid looks fairly similar to the raid from Spire of Stars. Mm-hmm. And I don't see anything in the tower ever where I'm like, man, I really want that. And that's causing a really challenging gameplay loop for me in Destiny because I sign on and I don't know what the chase is anymore.
So there's definitely a balance to be struck, right? Like, obviously, you could skew one way or the other as to, you know, you definitely don't want to recycle all old content all the time, right? Because that would be a bummer. But you also can't spend too much time and resources on entirely new things because that takes time and money and it slows down the development process. So there's a balance, right? You got to do a little bit of both. And I think Bungie's done a pretty good job in Destiny 2 of giving us some old stuff and some new stuff. But like, to your point, there needs to be that carrot on a stick and there needs to be something that entices hardcore players to continue chasing something, whether or not that's an old thing or a new thing, I think is to be determined. But like, I do kind of get what you're saying, but at the same time, that's the game, you know, like trying to, yeah. Guess what? I'll make a wild prediction right here. Destiny 3. Destiny 3 is a game where you're going to have to earn weapons and complete challenges to earn gear and learn more things about your character and acquire power. Like, that's what the game is. Like, it'll always be that.
And what if all that stuff is just stuff that you had in Destiny 2? They take it all away again and you're starting over and you're just getting the same weapon for the third year in a row.
So again, I can see why that would suck. Yeah. But I would also say I think Bungie is a talented enough development studio to where if they were thoughtful and took their time with it, that you could think of an interesting way to delete everything from Destiny 2 and then re-earn the exact same thing and make that worthwhile, make mm-hmm. that interesting. Like what they kind of did with Destiny 2 where, like, your vault is gone because it got destroyed by the Red Legion. Like, it was a narrative way to explain why everything was gone.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that, except a little bit more inventive because now we've seen that.
Well, and I think that's going to be their challenge. I think people are like, oh, don't do that all over again. And I don't think they will blow up the vault, but you're right. If they take it all away,
to be clear,
how do you get it back?
To be clear, I'm not advocating for Bungie just to recycle old content.
But you're saying they could.
I'm saying that there's a balance to be struck. If you take old content, you're going to give it to us again, and you do it in an interesting way.
Yeah,
I don't mind that.
I definitely need that carrot because I don't have it right now. All my characters are 650. I have all the gear. I've done all the raids. For me, you guys are PvP guys. But for you, I get it.
So that's what I was just going to say. So I didn't want to
even in PvP though, dude. In Destiny 1, I would play with you guys all the time because I felt compelled to chase the gear from
and Trials
of Osiris, which is gone.
Yeah,
so that I could be geared up for other PvP modes, to play with you guys, to be geared up for Trials when it came back next weekend, and they took that away. So I have little to no incentivization to be doing PvP.
So I think that's the thing. Like for us, you know, and I've said this probably a few times, we see Destiny as like PvP is an end game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you don't have that and there's only PvE, PvE is great. I like the way that the game's flowing and you get weapons and all that stuff, but PvP, that is the end game for us because we get the weapons, launch into PvP, play it, test it out. Like, that's what Steven and I did last night for like a half an hour. Like, mess around with the gear. Like, at what range does this work? I'm on controller. Does this hip fire? Is it better to ADS? You're missing that because that's not part of your repertoire.
Yeah. And last word was never one of my favorite guns. So for me, I'm kind of like, yeah, I got it, but whatever.
I think, that's the challenge, right? Like, and I don't know if they, and it's hard for them probably to create those carrots in PvE that are outside of all these quests once you get them, right? Yeah. So if you don't feel that way, I don't know how you fix that.
Right? I don't know. I think it's half and half, right? Like,
I
don't know. To me, PvE is actually the most compelling part of Destiny right now.
Yeah.
I think PvP is kind of not in a great state. But the thing, like, there's stuff to chase in PvE. Like, the title. Like, me grinding the Dredgen title was actually some of the most fun I've had in Destiny 2 in general.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, I don't know. I find it hard when people... I don't know. Unless you don't value titles, I do think there are things to do. Like, the title grind is awesome. I just saw my first blacksmith title out in the wild, and I was like, oh, I really want that. That's so cool. Yeah.
There's definitely things to do. I would not argue that. And I'm not trying to say that Destiny's dead or Destiny's dying. I think a lot of people hear that when I'm saying, like, hey, man, I'm kind of struggling because I don't really know what I'm supposed to. Am I supposed to run the raid again? Am I supposed to chase a randomly generated drop?
Do you think
no, I don't care.
Cool?
Yeah.
No, I don't care. I get a title. Okay. Well, they're probably going
to
reset them.
They
reset stuff so often. I'm like, if I get it, are they just going to take it away?
Oh, man.
Because
if
they're about to take away my power level advantage.
Well, they haven't reset titles yet.
Because they were introduced with Forsaken.
But like you were talking about how you walk around the tower and you don't see anything worth chasing. Anytime I see a title, I'm like, that's the coolest thing.
Yes.
Okay.
Like, to me personally, that is the thing to chase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the difference between to go back to your carrot thing, I do agree there always has to be a carrot. Like, that's the most addicting thing in Destiny. Like, you want something and you chase for it and you grind for it. But there is a point in the content where it's like a content drought and there are no more carrots to chase. But the only difference between Destiny 1 and Destiny 2 is there was trials on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, thinking back at it now, like, I didn't play much D1 except trials once I got all my carrots.
Yeah.
So,
and now there's so much PvE to do. Like, in a way,
there's a ton of PvE to do. Like, there's a ton of like carrots that people might not care for, but there are a lot of carrots.
True.
And I feel like in D2, they've done a really good job of giving us those carrots. It's just there isn't that mode, like trials that. Because, like, how often did you do the raids in D1 over and over again?
A lot.
All the time. Like, for me,
let's be
a lot, but not like. Once you
let's
got it.
Let's be realistic. You did them a lot for like a month or two, but then after the third, fourth, fifth month, we didn't do them again.
No, because
the old ones? No.
I did them a fair amount because you always usually had like exotic chance drops and then chests and
but
all
like
that
I
stuff,
said, after like, the first or 2 months. Like,
once I got all the gear, but I ran Vault basically up until the second raid launched because I never got Gjallarhorn.
Yeah.
It took me forever to get Gjallarhorn.
Okay, so.
And Vex Mythic Class took me a long time. I never got all the weapons. Fatebringer took me a long time.
Yeah, so once you have all
the
carrots,
pieces,
though, you're not doing it for fun again, really.
Well,
you're
also,
doing it for the camaraderie of your
You
friends.
See the problem, yeah, though, I with do. Like making exotics the carrot. Like if the drop chance is so low for an exotic and you're doing the raid over and over and over again for 2 months trying to get that, you're going to have the same problem people had earlier in Destiny 2, which is that the exotic drop rate is too low.
It's still pretty low,
says the guy that got 2,000 voices in one.
Still don't have.
I'm not saying I said that. I'm saying that the community thinks that the exotic rate was too low.
I didn't do Jotun runs this week. Did 10 runs. Didn't get that.
Oh, can we talk about how stupid Jotun is?
I think it's pretty good.
Oh, a PvP match starts. I run and immediately get blasted by a Jotun.
When you know it's out there, it's pretty easy to avoid. You can usually jump. Like at range, it's kind of a little. You should be able to avoid that.
Yeah.
You should be able to avoid that. Steven, you were going to say something like we met probably in Trials, or I don't know.
Well, I was going to say we met like on the tail end of Taken King.
Yeah.
And I think I did one raid with you total.
No, exactly. I think at that point, like, because I had a different squad, but we met during Trials, and it was weird. I did run a lot of raids for that reason, but the power level as well as the raid weapons were so good, so you wanted to get different roles of them, right? Yeah, like, yeah. I ran them for that reason a lot.
You had the gear game. The weapon games, they were locked.
Yes. And the armor game, because the armor had game, perks.
And then you had two different types of armor, one that had, like, effects and stuff on it that you could unlock, and... Yeah. I'm still amazed that they have these fantastic raids that they just never remastered and brought to Destiny 2. I don't understand why that never happened. Maybe it will in the future.
Yeah. Time, resources.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we talked about...
Well, I mean, obviously those reasons, but they have this other stuff that they've brought into Destiny 2. Like, they brought back the Cosmodrome, for example, which we can't access anymore. And it's just this huge asset that they developed and created that isn't utilized anymore. It's strange that they're willing to invest time, money, resources into that thing that we're going to see once, but they don't want to work on the pinnacle items like raids and bring those over.
Yeah, but it's not a zero-sum game, right? Like, you probably have a priority list of the things you do want to bring back and what you can and can't do based on the time and resources.
Yeah.
There's probably a big list where, like, this is all the stuff we want to bring back. We can't do one, two, or three because they're too much time, money, and resources, but four, we can do that. Maybe that's like a Cosmodrome.
But we can bring back Last Word.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
We were just talking on the power level real quick. I think like 640, I wish that they would have almost had like a soft cap at 640 requiring you to do Iron Banner or the raids or something. Because when you had prestige mode in King's Fall.
Well, there's a reason why they did that.
I know, but it's like I miss that. Like, I get that they want everybody to be able to get to the cap by not doing those things and alienating them. And that's the reason with Prime Engrams there. But
it's a never win thing, because if you did that, I prefer that. I prefer you having to do the raid to get to max light. But when you do that, you have like the majority of the community saying, I don't have
content.
Yeah.
Right. But again, I'm saying that's the reason I did it. Like, you could only get to max power usually because it was like a hard mode or trials or, you know, Iron Banner. So I wish that there was that. Like, hey, here, 650 is the max, but we'll get you to 640, and then the last 10, you got to actually do the
raid.
Yeah, do the raid, or do trials, or do the forge, or something that's not just play anything you want and get a Prime Engram.
Something for me something for me is just off about Destiny 2, about that gear grind.
Yeah.
And I can't put my finger on it. I've been having trouble articulating what it is that's missing. But in Destiny 1, I love playing I was sweaty.
Yeah.
But like, I would go back all the time and try and get those raises. Like, when you got your arms finally, you lost your mind, or you got Vex Mythiclass, or you got Gjallarhorn.
Yeah.
And now when I get stuff, I'm like, oh, well, I got it.
Some of that, I think, is the token system. Yeah. Some of that was just how they had gear drops implemented. But it was kind of a different problem that we experienced. We joked, like, Forever 29 and Forever 31. How many times did you run Crota and never get the one piece that you needed? So you ran it like 20 times in order to get a helmet. Like, that was good and bad. There is definitely pros and cons, but now that it's a collection game, that I think has been taken away.
I think what Destin is feeling is exactly what you were talking about earlier. To get those things, you had to do the end game content. You had to do the raid to get to those certain thresholds, and if you had three characters, you had a limited amount of time per week. Now you have two. If you have three characters, you have literally any activity in the world, you can get to 650, right?
Yeah.
So I think that kind of kills that excitement.
I could do the raid, or I could do one match of Gambit.
Or
I could
do
one match of PvP.
I think the answer is making the gear unique to the activity. Like, you can still hit 650 by doing PvP or PvE or whatever you want. You don't have to do the raid.
They do have sets. They have gear sets.
But if you want, like, But if you want like a gear set that benefits you in the raid, you have to do the raid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, totally. I kind of cut you guys off. I just kind of wanted to get that out there and talk about it. But how do you feel about Last Word in the sandbox? Sean, you seem really positive about it. I've heard some feedback on Reddit about the console version of Last Word has really bad recoil, especially on ADS. And on PC, people are saying it feels better. How are you guys feeling about it on PC? You said, oh my God, it's so great before we came in here.
Yes. Awesome. So listening to those guys play, I'm on a controller, so give your take real quick and then I'll give the controller.
So you guys were on Discord with me the very first match I jumped into Crucible, and the first thing I said is like, it's a little different. And then 10 seconds later, I was like, this is the most amazing gun in the world. And it's because if you're within, let's call it 10 to 15 to 20 yards of someone.
And this is mouse and keyboard.
On mouse and keyboard, I play M&K.
We all play PC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We all play PC. Yeah. M&K, your controller, and your M&K too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So within that range, it literally just deletes people. Like if you can land all of your shots and if you can land headshots, like they just evaporate in front of you. Like it does so much damage so quickly.
Even I was doing okay with it and I suck. So
it is very, very powerful and very good. It actually kind of blew my mind to hear on console the recoil was so bad because in my head, like there is no recoil on it. Yeah. Like that's why it's so good. Is like I can just, when someone's running at me or running near me, I can just hold down the trigger, fire off 8 shots like within 1.5 seconds or less, and they just get deleted off my screen. And if they're a little bit further away, you have to ADS and then take your time because you lose the fan fire perk. But man, it is very, very powerful. I see it being outranged. Like by Ace of Spades.
Yep.
And if you have Memento Mori up, like the TTK might be even, but at close range, like in that and even up to mid range, like I just don't see anything competing.
Yeah, it's pretty, I mean,
primary wise.
So as a control user, I mean, again, even at 30 versus 60, like that's another shotgun. That's another different conversation.
I meant, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Kinetic.
Yeah.
When you're using a controller on a Dust Rock Blues. We were grinding for that a little bit last night. At 60 on controller, it's good to hip fire because it's a little bit of ADS, but not at range. So, Steven, you were beating me at range with M&K. Now, 30 frames, I don't know what that feels like. That's the main reason I can't play on console.
Just alt tab out of your PC copy and you'll remember 30 frames.
Exactly. And it's unfortunate that that's the case, right? Like, even when Destiny was really launched, like, I wanted to play on PlayStation for PvP, it does feel very different. It just, there's just the data that's not there. Like even the sensitivity that I play at between 60 plus and 30 is different. So I get that that's going to be an issue, but I think it's a nice balance. I think there's weapons that can definitely outplay it, like you said, from range. So introducing it into the game, it doesn't feel OP.
No, it doesn't.
Like I just think it feels pretty accurate.
And that's what I love about it. I hate sniping. I'm a shotgun ape. And Ace of Spades and shotguns, they just pair so well together.
Yeah.
And Last Word made me enjoy sniping. I played against CJ a couple times yesterday. I hate sniping, but I was sniping yesterday. It just fits so well with Last Word. Mm. And it's a gun that does get outranged by Nofragon, Luna's Howl, and Ace of Spades, and probably, like you said, Thorn. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't feel overpowered at all. And when you're close and you die to it and you get deleted, I mean, that's what the gun is supposed to do.
Yeah. You know what that moment is going to feel like.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I love about it is like it requires this sort of tactical mastery of the positioning. Like you can't – it is – you have to know like it's extraordinarily good, maybe the best like in-class weapon up to 20 yards. And then beyond that, you got to kind of be smart about how you approach the fight. And maybe you don't take a fight longer than that. If they're using a Nofragon or a Luna's Howl.
But the animation, seeing it in your hand, banning of the trigger.
It's
super cool.
Like, so iconic.
Yeah. Outside of Ace of Spades, because that's like Cade's weapon, like that idea like of the gunslinger, of it being a hipfire thing, of like this quick draw.
Yeah.
It's so cool, man. It's like the Wild West in space. Dude.
Yeah. It's slick.
That's a good time to transition actually into some fan questions, because we got a really good one from Goldbug, and we're going to get to a few of them today. But I don't know how many we'll get to. So if you have any, leave them in the comments below and let me know how you're feeling about Destiny, if you're feeling the same way I am, or if you're still excited and grinding every day. But here's the one from Goldbug that kind of leans on to what you guys were saying. He says, what is your opinion on flinch in the game?
I would like it removed. More recoil and decreased aim assist would be better, in my opinion. The flinch, especially ADSing on a lot of things, it's very hard to hit stuff. So how are you guys feeling about that? This is likely a PvP question. In PvE, it's there too, but PvP is where it's most important.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah. Steve and I have had this conversation too with snipers. We were playing last night to just test that stuff out. It is one of those things where I do feel like it's at a nice spot right now. I can understand why people want it, the flinch reduced, because it's on the second shot. Like, if you get hit when you're trying to get sniped, and you're aiming in for the second shot, it's really hard to line it, and it feels sometimes like you're on the head, and it just doesn't quite connect. Mm-hmm. You feeling that?
I was going to say, I don't actually have a problem with flinch itself. Yeah. I have a problem that you can't fight the flinch.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I have on numerous – this is why I don't really snipe, because I think if I'm sniping and I get hit, I should – have recoil, but if I'm good enough to time my crosshair coming down and land on them and then pull the trigger before the next flinch, that shot should land, and it doesn't.
Exactly.
It doesn't. Like, it doesn't.
Yeah. You're totally right. Yeah. And even though I suck, there have been shots where I'm like, okay, I know I'm bad, but that hit him in the face.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, so I have the moving target perk, which helps me. I mean, Steve, we were playing one-on-one. Like, how many times did I get the initial first headshot on you? And it's like, you are either sniping and getting a headshot or you're not. Now, the nicest thing is if you get a body shot with Luna's Howl and some of these other weapons that you're going to be able to switch to, because I like Bite of the Fox, which is a primary, it is a nice game still to be able to hit a body and then switch your weapon. Getting a second shot off on a sniper is not feasible if you miss the first one. You just you might as well like run away because you're at a lost cause.
Yeah. Steven, how are you feeling about snipers and flinch?
Sean nailed it on the head. The part of the skill gap in D1 was you could combat the flinch. You could fight through the flinch. You could predict where your reticle was going to go. In D2, it's just like a crapshoot. Like,
I got hit. I might as well just
It flies everywhere.
It's literally – sorry, go ahead.
I'm assuming this person is on PC because they said decreased aim assist. I don't think decreased aim assist is – there's a ton of aim assist in Destiny, but look at the hand cannons. Hand cannons feel like crap because there's not a lot of aim assist. They had to up it in a patch recently – or not recently, in year one.
Yeah.
Decreased aim assist, I think, would make Destiny not feel good on console.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think more recoil or decreased aim assist actually makes PvP or anything better on console or on PC.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, a way to fight through the flinch is best.
Yeah. Wait, this, so he would like flinch removed, but more recoil. Gotcha.
Yeah, I thought that said
more flinch. Yeah.
I mean, that's an interesting conversation because I feel like it's actually pretty good, but I can understand people wanting it reduced. I think that's the main reason why sniper meta is very low right now, because people can't hit the second shot. It's not being able to hit the second shot when you're taking hits that I think is the reason why. It's the reason why I know you don't snipe.
I remember this the very first time I jumped into Destiny and started sniping in Destiny 2.
Yeah.
I took a shot in the head or like in the body, and like my aim went up, and I was like timing it, and like I landed right on, pulled the trigger as soon as that crosshair came, and then I got flinched again.
Yeah.
And it's 100% on his head. I'm not moving. It landed, and no kill. No hit, no damage. And I was like, that's dumb. And I stopped sniping because it should work that way.
And I think this again was created because in Destiny 1, snipers were very OP. Like they were, even Icebreaker. Like Icebreaker was crazy. It was slow and had crazy amount of recoil, but not flinch. Like if you came down with an Icebreaker and missed the first shot, you could hit the second one.
You're right. And you know what? Because of that, I learned how to snipe in D1 and I got better at it.
Yes.
And I think I would like that more than this flinch thing where I can't do anything with sniper.
And I think we all joke, like, I think I've seen this comment too. The thing that hinders Destiny 2 in its main competition is Destiny 1. And especially from a muscle memory standpoint, people are even saying that about The Last Word. Like, if you played a lot of Destiny, you actually are always comparing it to Destiny 1. And that is their biggest challenge when you take the same weapons from D1, bring them into D2, but they feel different.
Yeah.
There's a psychology there you can't quite, like.
So here's a great sort of an example of where Bungie has actually done this perfectly before. You played a little game called Halo.
Yes.
Oh, when you get
you get
out of your ADS.
Yeah, if you get knocked out of ADS when you're sniping.
Yeah.
If your crosshair was on him, even when you're un ADS,
pull the trigger and
you can pull the trigger unscoped and still headshot that guy from across the map because it's
still a sniper.
Yeah. And you're aiming in the right direction, like whether or not you're scoped in or not, you know? And it just feels like It feels like an unnecessary nerf in Destiny.
But there's a broader conversation there about, like, you know, the Icarus perk when you jump and bloom if you're not scoped in. Like, all that stuff is done intentionally to lower the skill gap so that it's, you know, there's not OP dominant snipers. Like, I get why.
See, I say that's not good.
Yeah, so this is the thing. I don't mind there being a big skill gap, one. And then two, I don't like the idea of artificially decreasing the skill ceiling.
Yeah.
Like, that's the problem. Is like, if you're good enough to be able to land a really awesome sniper shot, the game shouldn't limit you from doing that.
Yeah. Have you guys played comp at all?
I sort of did.
Somebody was saying it's hard to get in.
Yeah.
Oh, it's awful.
Yeah, it's not great.
We played two games in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, because we're at like 3,500, almost 4,000. And at that range, I understand the reasoning. But now, especially on PC, with the player base not there, you can wait sometimes like 10, 15 minutes before you get into a game.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so it's like,
a good time for everyone involved.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like for every pro, there are some cons. And yeah, that's the only one.
I got a more positive question from Insomnia Bound. When did everyone in the group realize Destiny was something special for them? Like, what was that wow moment?
That's a great question.
Does anybody have one off the top of their head?
I mean, Trials for sure, because... You know, again, I met Steven playing Trials. I've actually met a bunch of people outside of the game that I met playing Trials. I still think that is absolutely crazy. Today, actually, or with Bife on the 29th with Fran, you guys were actually out of town. It's my third year anniversary on Fireteam Chat. And it was really weird because that was some of the connection to getting to IGN. I played with you a little bit, played with Fran, and, you know, was investing tons of hours. So those early raids and that experience, because I was never a PvE guy, it was crazy to have that mechanical, you know, team effort into these experiences. Because I looked at Bungie as the PvP game. I did not come into Destiny thinking, oh, I'm going to play this and we're going to do raids and PvE. Like, that was not even in my consciousness for something that was going to be there. So that was an icing on the cake. Love the PvP. PvE was extra and I loved it.
Mm. What about you? Sean?
Oh. For me, it would have had to be Vault of Glass, like doing that for the first time. Like, just the sort of the design of it, the mechanics of the encounters, like how big and expansive and awesome it was. And I've always thought the Vex are like the most compelling enemy in terms of like who they are and what they do and why they, like, time traveling, hive minded robot. It's just super cool. Mm-hmm. So I think, like, when I jumped in there and kind of realized, like, oh, this is what Destiny is at its core, like these really advanced team mechanics and great gunplay and awesome world and design and lore. Like, that's when I was like, oh, this is a game that I think if it's like this all the time, it'll be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Steven?
Man, that's I feel pretty nostalgic thinking back at it. It's probably Vault of Glass for me. I was addicted to Destiny 1, just like getting all the loot and stuff. That I thought it was so cool that like the engrams dropped and stuff like that. And yeah, like it was kind of like RNG and that, like, it kind of feels like you're gambling.
Yeah.
And it's fun.
It probably is intentional, like Steven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
dopamine.
Vault of Glass. Yeah, that dopamine. It just triggers.
Yeah.
And that Vault of Glass, the first time entering it, because I remember we were just chilling in party chat and someone, I didn't even know Vault of Glass was a thing. Like, I didn't know there was a raid.
Yes. Me either.
Someone in my party chat was talking about it. And I was like, wait, so it's like a strike? It's like a really hard strike? And they're like, yeah, but it's like really hard. Like,
you didn't know about Vault?
Really?
No, like,
yeah, I didn't know that either.
I mean,
and he was like describing it to me. He's like, there's like a mechanic, and like, and I was like, okay, so like, did you beat it? And he's like, no, we've been trying for like 25 hours. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And I was like, so it's like a nightfall. And then he's like, no, it's not a nightfall. It's something crazier. So I like hopped in and I was like, dude, this is insane.
Yeah.
But like, I think the time I realized it was special, this is going to be super sappy, it was when I started connecting and making friends off Destiny. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, I would not know any of you guys if it wasn't for Destiny.
Yeah.
If you think about it, I literally know you because of Destiny. I know some of like my closest friends. This is a weird way of thinking. If I got married today, right?
It might be because of Destiny.
No. If I got married today.
Where are you going with this?
If I got married and I was compiling my invitation list, like half of those people I think would be from the Destiny community.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Like, I've met so many people from Destiny, like, and then you guys, you like Lifted. Man, I know so many people from Destiny. I think that's when I realized it was special.
Yeah. I mean, that is a big part of it too. I've met like
Getty.
Bodum and Lloyd and Trevor and all these guys, and you know, Orbs for my bros, Randy Savage, my crew on the Xbox, who have now migrated over to PC finally. A lot of friendships made through this game. It's one of the real special parts. I'm actually really surprised none of you brought up the really one defining moment for Destiny that I think a lot of people love and fell in love with, which is when we all spent 2 months shooting into a cave.
Oh, the loot cave.
I don't know, fun fact, I never did that.
What?
Oh, oh my
gosh. Never did that.
You missed out on a lot of engrams.
Yeah, you did.
Never did that.
So for me, my answer kind of leans into what Steven said, the relationships that we've built and such. Like, you and I really started conversing through Destiny.
Yep.
Sean, I always hated you. And Steven. Like, no, I'm just kidding. And Steven's here because of his relationship with CJ and Fran. And I kind of started having him work on some Fortnite stuff for us. And he ended up being all right.
Turns out he's kind of good.
So, yeah.
Funny really story. Games. So the first, I knew Fran from Fireteam chat, and he was streaming. He was playing Trials, and he was just getting mollywopped.
Yeah.
But I went in his chat, and I was like, hey, do you want to play? Like,
yeah,
we can play together. The, you know what the first thing is? Oh, I need to know what your KD is.
That's oh my God, that's the first question.
He's thirsty. One of that lighthouse rub.
Listen, Fran, I've seen you play.
Also, another super surreal moment is Lars. I followed Lars for the longest time since Halo 2 and the Vidox and stuff.
Yeah. And Lars is cool.
Yeah. And just seeing Lars in those Vidox all the time and just knowing his name and like knowing that he was a Halo person and then just seeing him for the, like meeting him in person for the first
time.
Was
that at
E3?
Yeah.
It felt weird. It felt so surreal because I've known this guy for like a decade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not personally, just like in the Halo universe,
yeah,
and just shaking his hand for the first time, I was just like, holy shit, this is long.
That's a very surreal thing that happened to me, too. I was walking to the Destiny booth at E3, and I hear a Finnegan, and I, like, turn around, and there's a guy who I don't really know, and he's like, it's Lars from the Destiny team, and I was like, oh, hey, man, what's up? Like, I've seen you in videos and stuff. Mm-hmm. It was interesting that he knew me.
It was super surreal for me. Yeah. Like, I was like, dude, that's the Vidoc guy.
Bigger picture, the big wow moment for me was the first Guardian Con I went to. I had no plans to go, and then Fran's like, you need to go. You need to go to the event.
You need to go.
You're the host of the show.
You need to go.
So, I do this show with you guys, and I sit in a studio. Nobody's in here. Ronnie's in the back. I know him. It was probably Malkowitz back in the day, or I was the one hitting record on the camera. And I start making this show with Jose and Alfredo and Sean and Fran and the people who were here at the time. And then you go to an event like Guardian Con, and I'm like, no one's going to know who I am. Like, I go to industry events all the time, and sometimes you get a hello.
Yeah.
But going to Guardian Con on a personal note and having people walk up to me and recognize me and say thank you for the show and everything, like, like that's humbling for me. But secondarily, Guardian Con as an event is this really, really special event because it's all the content creators sort of coming together to support an amazing charity, raise a ton of money, and it's a really good feel-good event for everybody involved. And it's sort of like really highlights why the Destiny community is amazing because you've heard me on this show. I talk about how I'm having like a content lull for me and I'm looking for that new carrot to chase. But I've established friendships with because of this game. I've helped work on a show for nearly 200 episodes, which is coming up, by the way.
A few more?
Yeah. And and I'm part of a larger community, some who know me, some who don't, that is just doing awesome things for the world at large. And for me, that is a wow moment. The fact that everybody involved with Destiny can come together and do something amazing like that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we've played a lot of first-person shooter games. I mean, we're kind of on the SAP train. We might as well keep going. Like, have you guys had any of these experiences really in other games besides Destiny? I have in Halo 2. Halo 3 and Reach. I've met players in those games that I became friends with in real life. I don't think of really any other shooter games where that's happened to me. I think Titanfall 1, I met a few people, but it's been mostly Bungie games, which is weird that secret sauce is just kind of embedded in there like that.
Yeah.
Time really. Tell. Friends.
StarCraft?
I've had some friends from like World of Warcraft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Way back.
But nothing quite like Destiny.
Yeah.
StarCraft maybe for me, but not real life people that I met. That was like before I was in the industry or anything. So it's like you talk to people online and then you find yourself signing on and hanging out with these people across the internet that you're just typing to that you sort of establish a relationship with. And it's a really fascinating sort of development.
Yeah. And everybody in the chat too. Like it's really cool that we have you know, a community of people who come to watch the show every week. Mm. It's super odd still to me that people still just come every week to chat.
You see the
and
regulars.
Hang out. Yeah, like they're in the comments. Like Michael Hill's there all the time. Favorite Friday show. It's like, yeah. You know, it's cool that that actually is a thing. And so, yeah, I appreciate everybody who is in the chat all the time. So,
yeah, definitely.
It's cool. That's all I have for this week. There's a ton more questions. Paris left a question. It's somebody that I definitely want to get on the show. He's a very nice man. If you guys haven't met him before.
Yeah.
But yeah, awesome. That's all we have for this week. We went over on time, which is totally fine.
People seem to like that.
We have questions for next week. So here's what I'm going to ask. In case there's nothing big to talk about next week, leave some questions in the comments below. We'll pin a comment, and you guys can ask us anything that you would like, and we'll converse about it. Take me to task. Take any of us to task, and we'll talk about it directly with you on this show. That's all I have for this week, guys. Thank you so much for joining me. And until next time, Guardians out.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.